Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Phase Zero, episode 33, is officially happening. I'm your host, Jenna Anderson, for this week. I am hosting for reasons we will get into shortly, but I'm very happy that all of y'all could be here. I just know that everybody's like, why isn't Brandon on the main camera? But I'm joined today.
Screw that guy. He's out of here.
I'm joined today by Jamie Jurak.
Hello.
I'm joined by Jim Viscardi.
Hello.
And we have our very own Brandon Davis live from CinemaCon. He is in the middle of running back and forth between various panels, but he wanted to join and be live from the show. So here we go. What's up?
Hello. What a great intro, Jenna. That was awesome.
Thank you. So, what do you have in store at CinemaCon today? I know you said that there's some sort of Disney stuff happening.
Yeah, so I'm actually going down to the Disney panel in like a minute here. I'm hoping they show something, because what Disney likes to do at CinemaCon is do like an update on their slate, and then they go into a movie. So I'm going to watch Shang-Chi and Legend of the Ten Rings again. Humble brag, I know. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Humble brag.
I know. I'm very... It's awesome, okay, Jim? It's an awesome life, and someone has to live it.
I'm just over here, like, I haven't seen Shang-Chi even once, and you're over here singing it twice. But no, that's awesome.
Brandon, I know you normally at CinemaCon, they show a lot of like posters and things like that. Like, are you seeing a bunch of that stuff? Like things that we haven't seen before yet? Or is it mostly just stuff that we all have seen?
Oh yeah. So there's posters. Like if you look at this hallway, people who are watching live can see this. If you're listening in podcast form, I'll try to describe it for you. So at Caesar's Palace, it's all very fancy and there's chandeliers and stuff, but surrounding that is movie posters. Like it's basically a nerd's dream, I think, because I love it. If you go all the way down to the end of the hallway, like I would walk down there and show them to you right now, but the service gets a little sticky, so I don't want to start cutting out. But like there's, you know, you got No Time to Die, a poster you've seen before, but then there's the Zachary Levi movie, The Underdogs, Halloween Kills. There's like a thing over there that just endlessly plays movie trailers all day. And we just saw yesterday, I was sprinting. If people were following on Twitter, my flight was delayed. I sprinted to the Warner Brothers panel. I missed a few of the smaller movies that they showcased at the beginning, like The Many Saints of Newark and Malignant and a couple others. But I got there just in time to see like the end of the Matrix trailer, which was awesome from what I saw. And then they showed a huge like Batman behind the scenes stuff. And then a long clip from Dune, which I imagine is going to be like a 7-hour movie, if that clip is any indication. But I'm hoping that Disney does something. I have no reason to believe Disney's going to actually show us anything about their slate. I don't think they've sent anybody here. I literally think they might just click play on Shang-Chi. And so we get to just watch it. But that helps my breakdown video get arrive on release day. So that's cool. I'll be taking notes on the second watch through. And then Universal has something later. So I'll be going to that. And maybe we'll get some Halloween news or something. So very stay nice. Tuned to comicbook.com for that.
Shout out to our very own Aaron, because the meme that he had of you doing the weekend. Oh, speak of the devil, he's actually right here.
Wow, Mephisto. Mephisto.
Somebody say my name.
Yes, we do. No, I was talking about your very excellent meme comparing Brandon running through CinemaCon to the weekend at the Super Bowl.
It was so perfect. I legit laughed out loud at that.
It was amazing.
All right, so Aaron, and on that note, actually, I do have to run again. Got to get down for this Disney presentation. If there's any updates, I will text you guys and you can read them out live on the show. Awesome. And Jenna, kick ass on this and have fun with it.
All right.
All right, y'all. I'll talk to y'all later. Have a good show.
See ya.
All right. So as Brandon said, I am the host for today's episode. So obviously, if you know me, that means we're going to do a 5-hour conversation about the Black Canary HBO movie. I'm joking. Just follow me on Twitter if you ever want to have that conversation, because I am ready to have it. But in all honesty, we do have a ton of news. There was an Eternals trailer that came out since we last did a full episode. Obviously, we had the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer. If you want to hear our breakdown of that, we did a whole separate episode on Monday that was so much fun, so chaotic, and a lot of people joined in on it, which I thought was just amazing. And then we have a ton of actual MCU news to talk about. Like, I was putting the rundown together and I was like, wow, on an off week, I feel like one of these things would be like all we would talk about for half an hour. And yet there's like 10 of those things. So yeah, we have a lot to talk about today. Starting off, we have the second and final trailer for Eternals dropped last week. I know we had kind of speculated about it on here of like when it was going to come out, what it would show, what it needs to show in order for this movie to be a thing that a lot of people resonate with. So I was just wanted to go around. What is everyone's general reaction to it? Like, what did everyone think of the trailer? Jim, you're up top, so you can go first.
I think it's a... Man, I'm shocked that we're like they have said that this is the final trailer. I'm sure we will get like clips and things like that, TV spots and whatever that will inevitably show up that Marvel loves to do. But for like them to just show us the teaser, which told us nothing, and the trailer, which seems like it has told us everything, is interesting. And I think it's one of those things where we got a lot. I just don't know if it really explains how or what the movie is going to be. I think it did a great job answering the question of where the hell were the Avengers, right? Where the hell were the Eternals during Avengers Infinity War and Endgame? And where, what is the threat that brings the Eternals back? And so I think on that front, it definitely answered those questions. I think it did what it needed to do. I think other than that, we just need to kind of see where is it going to fit in. We know timeline wise where it fits, but like, how does it move the MCU story forward? In a way, right? So the Eternals trailer, I think, does everything it's supposed to do. I mean, look, we got a better look at their costumes, which I still don't am not in love with. We got a look at their big triangle ship a bit more, which is still a weird thing. And we got to look at the Deviants too, which is good. And we'll talk about Crow in a second.
So Jamie, what was your reaction?
Oh man, I'm so stoked. I know that like you guys as comics people are a little disappointed in kind of the lack of vibrancy. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be like cinematography wise, one of the best Marvel movies just because we've got Chloe behind it. So I'm really stoked for that aspect, but I am bummed for you guys that it's not quite the vision that you had imagined. So I'm curious to see how it's all going to come together and how I feel like we're going to land. When the movie's all said and done, I think we're going to have different opinions. And I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, what about you? Aaron?
Oh, we may have lost him.
Can you hear us?
Nope, we definitely lost him.
Oh, well, I'll share my reaction while we wait to figure out what's up with Aaron. I agree with what both of you said. I think the movie visually looks gorgeous, and the trailer definitely showcases that. It's just the thing of, is this the right kind of gorgeous for the Eternals? Like, there's part of mm-hmm. me that does want the very Jack Kirby vibrancy and the just, like, unabashedness of how wild those designs are in the comics. Like, it's a little underwhelming in that regard. I will say that the Funko Pops and all of the Funko merch actually sold me on the costumes more than any of the actual marketing has, because I think that really conveyed how vibrant those costumes can be. And yeah, it's like, I'm shocked as well that this is the final trailer, because it seems like in the grand scheme of things, as we've established in our Eternals, like lesson episode, there is so much lore to the Eternals that I feel like the trailers have only really scratched the surface of. Like, I feel like there's so much more that you kind of need to educate general audiences on before you show them this movie. But I'm kind of curious about the fact that they aren't really doing that yet. So,
yeah, I think the other thing will be interesting to just see how studios modernizes, I guess, the concept of the Eternals and then takes the and then like is able to serve it up on a platter for a new audience. Like, look, like Jamie said, like there is a very small audience of people who know, like, who love the Eternals, you know, like the comic diehards do, right? And so like they need to do something to take that concept and make it accessible, and like, and I think that that will be exciting. I think the only thing for me though is you know, I don't know if the trailer helped me in that sense, but I'm hopeful that when the movie inevitably comes out, I will love it.
I definitely agree. And like, I know you had touched on it a little bit, but I do find it really interesting that this is set after Endgame. I know in the past we had kind of speculated it would either be like during the blip or way before, or it would be a little bit nebulous with time. Because I know a lot of jokes have been made about how the Eternals need to do a notes app apology for all of the things that they missed out on. There are clearly a lot of incidences that they could have intervened in, even though they say that they don't do that. So I know all of those memes have just been hilarious because it is just such a, it's such an interesting choice to go with that sort of thing. And then, yeah, Jim, do you want to talk about the crow design? Because I know I have feelings about it, and I know you probably do as well.
I just, not that I need a comics accurate crow, right? Because I don't need that. What I also don't need is generic alien looking, you know, a generic alien looking thing, right? And I think, like, we've seen enough sci-fi movies now that like that design just does not feel, it doesn't feel Marvel-esque. I think it's that to me where I'm just like, oh, okay. But I think also too, my theory is that Crow is, while yes, he is the quote villain, I don't think he is like the villain of this whole thing. And so, because I think it inevitably what, you know, what generally happens in Eternal stories is it's usually, you know, yes, the deviants and the Eternals hate each other and there's a constant battle for power kind of thing. And then, but like sometimes it's not all bad. And so I wonder if that's what we will get, what we'll get here.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, it's just like in a post Starro the Conqueror world, it's kind of like I'm underwhelmed by this sort of creature design. Like I feel like there was a way to do a comic accurate crow that is just very comic accurate and unabashed in its sort of design. So yeah. It is interesting that they are taking a more subdued, like you said, it doesn't feel very Marvel. Like it feels like the Outriders did in Infinity War and like a symbiote. Like it feels like everything mm-hmm. that we've kind of seen before. So I'm curious to see how that actually looks in more than a few seconds of footage. But we'll have
on the flip side, I think the Celestials look great, right? Like from like kind of the top up, like they're like, I'm not totally in love with like the twiggy design of them because I love the Eternals in the comics as our, you know, big chunky, overlords. But they kind of do a good job kind of like going from the bottom, you know, to the waist up a bit and making them feel big and, you know, like celestial beings. And so, I wonder how many of them, we will see. We have seen two in the trailers. We have seen the head of one in Guardians, and then we saw one of them. Was that also Guardians that we saw the other one in?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Right. And so we've seen two in Guardians. We saw the head of one, and then we saw the one during that whole talk thing. And so I wonder if we're going to get that one. And then because then, you know, the other big question is what is being awakened? And I think, you know, on first blush, it is the deviants, but I think inevitably it is a celestial that is being awakened. And I hope it's the dreaming celestial, because that one always comes around to screw things up.
Mm-hmm. So moving on from Eternals, Jamie, do you want to talk about Venom 2? Because I know there was kind of an update, a maybe update yesterday.
Yeah, so it looks like we might get delayed to January. That came from Vulture. And similarly, since on the Eternals track, that could get delayed depending on Shang-Chi's box office performance. So we're back in this zone of like, should we start to panic? Are things going to get delayed again? Which sucks because going to the movies again is like all I have in my life. And I don't know, like, I'm one of the people that love the first Venom, so I'm like really stoked for Venom.
Dude,
so I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think that we're in the danger zone?
I'll let
go ahead, Jenna.
I feel like it is definitely a possibility. I felt like it was a possibility when we already delayed it like a week or so ago, because it feels like we're back in March 2020 of let's delay things a couple of weeks and hope it gets better, and then realize that that's not really feasible anymore. So if it does go to January, that's going to be kind of a bummer. I'm also curious how that will then affect like No Way Home, because I know, yes, technically No Way Home could still come out in December, but with Sony, like, I don't know how willing they would be to have those releases kind of so close to each other. And then with Eternals, yeah, I know we've spoken about Shang-Chi and about the interesting experiment of it all and whether or not the box office performance could affect Eternals. I feel like it's definitely a possibility, because I know, as we've said, Kevin Feige does not want Eternals to go on premiere access if he can help it. So it's just such a weird situation. Like, Jim, what do you think about it?
I think the thing to remember is, like, look, we're at the tail end of the year. There are only so many weekends that Venom can move to open up, where it's not immediately competing with somebody else or doesn't have enough runway. And like when we've talked about this before, where, look, Venom, Sony has no option, like no streaming option. And so they need that theatrical event for this movie. And so I think a lot of that will just come to where they, if they move it. To be said, look, they, you know, they have not moved it yet. These are reports and whatever. And I think that, like I said, I think they are still waiting. I think a lot of eyes are on Shang-Chi. I think there were positive signs with the release of Free Guy, right? Like, I think that, you know, that movie did way more than I believe anyone expected it to, and continues to do well. And so that was an untested franchise. That was basically, you were going to see Ryan Reynolds, and a lot of people wanted to see Ryan Reynolds. So this is a Marvel movie that is coming out. This would inherently bring more people out to theaters. And if it does, then I think Sony maybe sighs a little bit sigh of relief, or they're like, okay, maybe we have a shot here. And then depending on how things go, just, you know, environmentally with the world and culturally or whatnot, you know, if there's a good enough runway for it, then yeah, I don't think it'll move. But like, the only logical place for Venom to go is going to be next year. And so and that is not because they want to move it, you know, a million, you know, four more months out from when it's supposed to come out. It's just, if the other movies are not going to move yet, right? Like, no one's moving Spider-Man, no one's moving Dune, no one's moving Bond, but they said at CinemaCon the other day, like, they are not moving Bond. And so if they're not going to move Bond, then like, there are only so many places for Venom to go. And so I think, you know, while yes, you know, does it suck that, you know, Venom is going to be a casualty here? Sure, because I love that trailer and I want to see this movie so much. If I have to wait a little bit more for it, I'm okay.
That was perfectly said. I'm glad that you are like our box office like soothsayer. Like, anytime we're all worried, we can just go to you and you will help make us feel a little bit better about it. But Jim, do you want to talk about the Armor Wars news of the past week?
Yeah.
I know they had a good update.
Yeah, so we finally have a head writer on Armor Wars in Yasir Lester, who has worked with Don Cheadle before on Black Monday. And I think Don Cheadle is the kind of guy who is incredibly collaborative. Any of the shows and things that you have seen him in, Don Cheadle has either had an exec producer, you know, role, or at least, you know, creatively, you know, had a part in it. And so if he's able to work with someone again who he has worked with, just goes to show that, like, I think we're in for something good, in for something special. Look, it's one of those things, wherever Rhodey shows up, he is almost almost always one of the best parts of the things that he does show up in. And so the fact that, like, we're gonna, you know, let Don Cheadle kind of control the character a little bit more and tell the story that he wants to tell here with a collaborator that he's worked with before has me nothing but excited. Like, I like that we're not here having to be like, well, how are these two going to work together? What is this going to look like? Like, we already have that idea, and I'm all for it.
I completely agree. Jamie, do you have any thoughts on this?
No, I'm just ready for more Don. Put him in my eyeballs. I just watched No Sudden Move, the new Soderbergh, and it's just Don, he delivers every single time. And that's like, I'm just so stoked.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, can you finally hear us this time? Are you finally?
I can finally hear you. Awesome. I can turn everything on and off. And
oh my gosh.
I heard the laughter from my entrance. And then, yeah. So thank you guys. And yeah, I guess Armor Wars, that's awesome. I know that Spencer Perry from comicbook.com loves that series they worked on together before. So anything pairing the two of them together again is probably going to be good. I also agree with Jim. Lots of the laughs in my screening of Endgame came from anything that came out of Rhodey's mouth while they were planning anything.
He's so good. He's just so good. One of my favorite moments is just him doing the choking the air choke.
Oh my gosh, I agree. And what I love about the Armor Wars thing is I was not expecting them to go with such a head writer with a comedy background. Like I expected more of the like Mr. Robot alumni that we have on Secret Invasion and more kind of like someone who worked on like a prestige drama. So the fact that we're leaning a bit more comedic with the tone of the show based off of who you've got makes me really excited. Cause I also feel like Armor Wars has this potential to bring in the really weird Iron Man villains. And I feel like that is the way to bring them in, is to kind of be a little bit weirder and kind of more comedic with like somebody like Stilt Man or something like that. So, yeah. Aaron, do you want to talk about Cap 4? Because I know you have talked about how we always have news break after we're done recording, and then that was especially the case last week.
The post-credits, the Phase Zero post-credit special strikes again. I don't know what it could be this week. We've already opened the gates of Pandora's box like already on Sunday, so I don't know what's waiting for us after we get out of here. But last week, it was Captain America 4. Anthony Mackie officially signed on. We still got Marcus Spellman writing it, who wrote Falcon Winter Soldier, along with, I believe, Dalen Musson. I want to make sure I get their staff writer's name right. They'll also be helping write the screenplay. We don't know when exactly it's coming out. I think Kevin Feige talked to, I want to say, Collider about it as well. And he's like, oh, we have a date in mind. But these things are very fluid and they change. So I'm like, so you're just not going to tell us, huh, Kevin? And then I immediately laughed because I was like, poor Brandon. He's the only one who got raised with that. Is it never enough? Is it not enough? But we all want more. But everybody's excited. Everybody's happy to see Anthony Mackie back. No word on if we're going to get Sebastian Stan in Captain America 4. But here's hoping that we get some more of the two of them rolling around in fields together on the big screen.
Perfect. Yeah, does anyone else have any thoughts on this? Because I know we've spoken about it before, and I know it was kind of confirmed right after Falcon and Winter Soldier ended, but it is definitely nice that Mackie has, like, cut the check, like, he is in this movie. So, like, what does everyone else think about it?
I think it's just going to be one of those things where it'll be interesting to see how the MCU rolls out a bit, right? To see where on the future timeline that this feels like it will make the most sense to fit, right? Because we still have lingering in the background, Contessa de Valentin just putting together her Dark Avengers team. And I think, and I almost wonder if that's what's going to be the catalyst for Cap 4, right? Like something that started in Falcon and Winter Soldier will be worked on in the background and come to a blow in Cap 4. If we've only seen, Contessa only get, Val only has two heroes right now with Walker and Yelena. Will she pick up a Hulk in Abomination? Will she pick up, if Trickshot is in Hawkeye, will she pick up a Hawkeye there? Or will Jeremy Renner be bad and like join her team? Like, I think there's a lot of that is going to happen that to me makes the most sense to go to for Cap 4 to happen in. And if that's the case, I'm all in. I mean, I'm already all in, but like I'll be all in twice if that's the case.
Jamie, what do you think about the Cap 4 thing finally being confirmed?
Oh yeah, it felt like it was like, oh, I mean, yeah, we knew. Yep. It was nice to get like the official confirmation, but it wasn't like any big shock. I did like that Sebastian Stan put something about it in his Instagram stories. I think that's a good sign, because it would be weird if he wasn't in it. I wouldn't like that at all. But I'm just excited for Mackie. I think it's going to be an interesting new era.
Does he train? Is he going to train Taurus how to fly in Captain America 4?
He has to. we need to see that. That definitely needs to happen. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, so this has been so much fun so far, even with all the technical difficulties. We're going to take a quick 1 minute break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some stuff that Kevin Feige said. And then we're going to talk about What If Episode 3. So stay tuned.
Let's go.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Phase Zero, episode 33 is still going on. We're still having a lot of fun. So Kevin Feige has done some press for the Shang-Chi press tour, and he has said a bunch of different things that are of note, some of them to our very own Brandon Davis and some of them to other outlets. So we're going to talk about some of them. To just start things off, he confirmed to Comic Book and to Brandon that Ironheart will be in Black Panther Wakanda Forever, which I know has been rumored forever, and it was kind of a thing people were speculating about. So I am super excited that he finally confirmed this. He said, "We're shooting Black Panther Wakanda Forever right now, and the character of Riri Williams, you will meet in Black Panther 2 first. She starts shooting, I think, this week before her Ironheart series. I know there's already been set photos of her on set at MIT. So what does everyone else think about this? Because I think this is just such a cool way to introduce her in the MCU before we eventually get to her show.
I was going to say, she's going to get the best Iron Man suit because it's going to be made of vibranium, and that's it. Like that's going to be like, it'll be awesome to see, like, especially if it's a Riri, you know, Shuri jam piece, basically, like that's going to be, like, that's just going to be the greatest suit of all time. Like I don't know how you top that. But it'll be cool. I think, like, yeah, a lot of the set photos, have me excited, for, you know, what the possibilities are here. And, you know, we'll inevitably see her in Armor Wars, I'm sure. And then in her own show. And so this is good. Like I like when Marvel introduces characters in other stories first. I don't dislike, you know, like a thing like Shang-Chi where that's our first interaction with the character, but I love being able to immediately see a new character and how they interact with the MCU at large in that manner first. And so I think that's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm. Jamie, Aaron, what do y'all think about this?
Aaron, I love the E-viewing Ironheart saga where she's in Wakanda. It's very cute. It's very nice. I hope that we get some interplay between her and Shuri as she's kind of a fish out of water, because, you know, a lot of the fun of like Riri's character is she's usually the smartest person in the room, but that's clearly not going to be the case. Like in Wakanda Forever, she's going to have to learn the ropes along with it. And I think you're right. She's probably going to show up in Armor Wars too, because obviously we're just going to throw all the characters with all their crazy suits of armor against each other. So I'm excited to see. There's some other wild stuff from those set photos that I'm probably going to dance around now that I've talked about it. Don't expect everybody to look the same in Black Panther 2, everybody. So yeah, yep. I'm excited.
All right. Jamie, what do you think about it?
I just, you know, the puzzle pieces are slowly starting to come together for this Black Panther sequel. It's like, and we just have no idea what's going to happen. It's interesting. Like, this is an interesting early thing to know. And it's in a way, it's almost like more confusing. Like, what is this movie going to be about? But I think but I agree with Jim. I like when they introduce people that way. So I think that's going to be cool. Mm-hmm.
Jim, do you want to talk about what Feige said about the Fantastic Four? Not to be confused with our Fantastic Four.
Right, exactly. No, I think it's so, you know, obviously, you know, we send BD to these things, and now, and like there's a sometimes a misconception that I want to clear up really quick is that, like, you know, the only questions that people ask Feige are questions not about the project he is promoting. That is not the case. That is the stuff that we are generally able to put out first, because they don't spoil the project that Feige is there to talk about. And so, like, we got to talk to Feige for 10 minutes, and Brandon spent a good 6 minutes talking about Shang-Chi, and you'll see that stuff, I believe, is already on our YouTube page. So go check that out. But then, you know, so obviously, you know, the questions have become, okay, well, what else do we think we may get some kind of an answer from Feige? Because Feige is the master at being able to dodge questions that he does not want to answer. He is, I've done many an interview in my career. I have never seen someone have the dodge stats that Kevin Feige has. And so naturally, one of the questions Brandon asked him was about Fantastic Four. And more, the question was more, you know, we're at a stage in the MCU now where, you know, they're casting a lot of newcomers. They're casting a lot of big name faces. But for a franchise like the Fantastic Four, this is one that is going to be around for a while. This is not a one-off villain. This is not like, so how does Marvel put that together, knowing that this is a crew that they're going to want in the MCU for a while? And so, you know, Kevin Feige comes back with a Kevin Feige answer that gives us a bit of insight into what they're thinking, right? So Kevin goes, I think the MCU is a beautiful combination of both established actors and new faces. I think you look no further than Simu and Shang-Chi, and like, you know, Chris Hemsworth and Tom Hiddleston, like Tom Holland, an actor who had not yet been seen by a tremendous amount of people before. And then you have Benedict stepping into Doctor Strange, Christian Bale stepping into Thor, into Gore for Thor. It's always a beautiful combination of both, but it's really about the search for the best actor for the job, whether that actor is known to the world yet or not. I think it's interesting in the choices that he makes here, right? Because yes, Chris, Tom, and Simu were relative newcomers, but these were like starting franchises, right? Like, or like for the characters where like they're not like the MCU wasn't really established yet. And then so by saying Benedict Cumberbatch gives you an idea that I think when they come to cast this thing, one out of the four I'm going to say is going to be a heavy hitter. I don't think you're going to get two, but I think one will be a heavy hitter. Three, you'll get three newcomers here.
I agree. And like, I'm curious to see what he means by newcomer, because it's like, even then, like Simu has had like a successful True. Netflix show, and like Hiddleston and Hemsworth were still working in other things. So it's like, I'm curious what that what that kind of wording means. And if it could be somebody who's like, I've had a really long run, but my break is a superhero kind of thing. Like, I'm curious to see what that all means. Jamie, Aaron, what do y'all think about it?
I guess it's like, you know, how people can win Best New Artist at the Grammys and they've made five mixtapes that have made them like $5 million. We're going to probably get a little shade of that in there, I'd imagine. Also, I just can't.
We may have some breaking news, but go ahead. Keep going.
Is it more important what I'm talking about? If it is, bump me.
Go. It's fine. I'll jump in afterwards. Sorry. Okay, I thought it was the official Venom moving because of the email address it came from, but it's not. No. It's something else. Go ahead. It's not more.
All right. Woo. All right. I'll fossil up. Right. Exactly. Everybody remain calm. I think that they will probably, I think Jim's probably on the money. There'll be one. It will probably be Mr. Fantastic or Sue Storm, who will be like the established actors. And then they might go with newcomers for other things. Although I can't imagine with like Ben Grimm that they wouldn't take the opportunity to put the biggest name inside of the big CGI character like they've done before. That might be a way it goes too. But like, I'd say one or maybe two of the four. And also, I also believe that Fantastic Four is not going to be the first time we see them. I just don't have any hope that that's going to happen. In the Spider-Man trailer, there a lot of people pointed out on Twitter that there is a weird with the four light streams. There's a four in it. And I was like, we just keep finding things. Guys, please stop. I can only take so much. The Mephisto stuff, Fantastic Four stuff, other craziness that we're not going to get into here. So, yeah, I think you're probably going to get about two out of the four at maximum are established names.
Jamie, what do you think about it?
Oh, I have no opinions on this one, really. you know, I think this might be the time to tell you all a confession that I've been holding deep inside this whole time. And that's, I've never even seen a Fantastic Four movie. Not a single
one. Mean, no one's gonna hold that against.
I know.
No one's
gonna hold that against. It's just, and you know me, I'm like the movie person. But I'm excited that this is gonna be whoever this cast is. That's gonna be my only real cast. I don't think why I ever watched the other ones. Let me just get it this way. So yeah, I don't know.
I love it. Everyone in the comments is wanting us to fan cast it. For the sake of time, I think we should maybe do that another day. But if anyone has like one really good casting in their mind, like feel free to call it out, because I feel like that would be kind of cool.
I honestly, I don't. And I don't even want to begin to fan cast this. I just want to be surprised.
Okay. See, I was going to say with what Aaron was saying of putting the biggest name as the thing, I feel like Seth Rogen would be perfect. Like, he has become my fan cast. I think it would be amazing. I just imagining hearing him say it's clobbering time just like makes me so happy. Like, I
that think is could, inspired.
He could really get to the root of the thing in a way that I feel like we haven't gotten in the other movies. Like, that is just my go-to. And then also like Glenn Howerton as Reed Richards, because if you've ever seen like more than two episodes of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, he could make that work in a crazy way. So those are my two, but I was curious, like, Aaron, do you have any fan casts that you could think of?
Oh God, I don't know. All I really want from the movie is some sort of gag where Chris Evans is in it and talks with the Human Torch about, you know, something about motorcycle etiquette or whatever. Like, that's all I really want. Either that, or whenever they eventually do Battle World, for him to do it again and do it, for him to fight himself. That's all I want. I'm real simple.
I love that. So, Jamie, do you want to talk about what Feige said in about Loki season two?
Oh, yeah. So he told Collider that it's underway. We're developing it as we speak. The hope is that much of the same team will return. Kate is going on to bigger and better things. So the director search will begin shortly. So, you know, just a matter of we're waiting to see who's going to direct it. It's probably my guess is it's going to be a minute before we get that second season, which is sad. But it's Marvel TV is this Disney Plus is not like regular TV. Same with Star Wars. Like, it's not as frequent. So I think we just have to be patient.
I agree completely. Like, the one bummer of this is that it does sound like it's a little bit further away than we might have thought it would be. But I'm confident that whoever they pick for a director is going to be really cool. So, Jim, Aaron, do y'all have any thoughts on this too?
Are we losing Waldron? Are we losing him?
I don't think so. People thought that we were after the finale, because he had like the end of timeline or whatever, like the screenshot from episode one. He had posted that on Twitter and people
He was being really weird and cryptic about it all. Yeah, so like,
but I hope we aren't.
Same. Yeah, like, that's the thing. I mean, look, it's got a bit of a runway, right? Like, considering all the multiversal stuff, like, it needs to happen after Doctor Strange 2. And so like, they've got a bit of time to figure it out. And we'll just wait and see, right? Like, well, in that time, like, we're gonna get so much other Marvel stuff anyway. Like, we're gonna get Ms. Marvel in between, we're gonna get Hawkeye in between, we'll probably get Moon Knight in between, which is the only show that matters. And then we'll get Loki season two. It'll be fine.
Yeah. I will say, like, my one theory is that it has to be before Ant-Man 3, because I feel like Kang factors into that movie, it's like you kind of need to get through whatever Kang's role is in Loki before you get to that. So I feel like if it's going to come out, it's going to be around that sort of stretch of time. So, and then before we get into What If, Aaron, do you want to talk about what Feige said about Avengers 5?
Sure. So basically, we all have been wondering when we're going to get Avengers 5, and for Feige, when he's talking to Collider, he said that, "I think we want there to be a reasonable amount of time from the end game to the start of a new saga, which is already underway and has already started. And then you need time, as you did in phase one, to build that saga before you start bringing everyone together." In another interview, he also said they also are going to explore what it means to be an Avenger, because you got that little like teaser joke at the end of the Eternals trailer about, well, Captain Rogers and Iron Man are gone, so who's going to lead the Avengers? And all of us are home are thinking the same thing. Like, what's going to happen? Like, also, like, you know, Sam couldn't get a loan. You need money to go fight crime. So someone's going to have to step in to help foot the bill for the shawarma so that we can keep kicking evil butt. I don't know who it's going to be. You don't know what the composition of the team's going to be either, because, you know, everybody does it. Obviously, some people aren't coming back. You know, there are younger heroes that might step in and substitute for their like older counterparts. So it sounds like we're going to be waiting a second. For me, I just want to know from everybody else, what do you think the storyline they'll adapt for Avengers 5 is, because I have like a idea, but I don't know if that's what it's going to be.
You should share your idea and then we'll all go around.
Okay. I think because they're just adapting the crap out of everything I read when I was in high school and probably early college, that we're headed for Civil War 2. And they're just going to start off with that.
Oh.
All right.
And then out of the chaos of them fighting with each other, you will have, you know, created the crucible for a new team to be stronger from them all bickering about not seeing eye to eye about stuff. And that means that there would probably be mutants there by the time that we got to Avengers 5, which would sort of play into his timeline thing about there needing to be a lot of time.
Huh. See, I'm completely in a different camp. I want them to do their own version of like a Silver Bronze Age, like Avengers versus Kang story. Cause I feel like we have Kang in so many other parts of the MCU. I feel like that is building to him being the Avengers 5 villain in some capacity. So I just want some like big, crazy time traveling story that also at the same time introduces us to this new team dynamic of who all of these new Avengers are and how they all interact together. Because even like the characters that we have confirmed, they have not really interacted with each other. So I feel like that is going to be a huge selling point and a huge like a huge well to go to in terms of story of seeing like Carol and Sam and Doctor Strange and all of these people interact. So I feel like there's a lot of potential there. Jamie, do you have any theories or thoughts?
Nope. I'm just waiting to talk about what if.
Uh-huh. It'll be interesting to see if they tackle something like Avengers Forever, another Kang-centric-ish kind of storyline where Kang plays a little bit more of a hero role there, which I think inevitably is what's going to happen, right? I think Kang is going to be a villain kind of in the back, or like doing things that are villainous in the background to serve his own purposes. But I think inevitably, like, in the same way that, like, I mean, I don't understand how, but people try to argue for Thanos's theory, right? Like, I think, like, there will still, like, there will be that bit of ambiguity with Kang as well. And so we'll see. It'll be interesting. Like, it's, yes, they, you know, are adapting a lot of things left and right, but where they inevitably fall, you know, especially if the Young Avengers are coming together, like I would love to see Children's Crusade, right? Like that would be great. So there's a ton of stuff that they can do.
I completely agree. I've been in the mindset of like Children's Crusade could be the like Young Avengers show or like WandaVision season 2. Like I've definitely been in that camp. All right. So we are going to talk about What If episode 3. I know Jamie has to duck out in like 15 minutes. So we will try to get as many of her thoughts as possible. So full spoilers for What If episode 3. If you have not, there we go. There's a little banner at the bottom. So this was the episode that I know those of us who hadn't seen it ahead of time were kind of like, what is this going to entail? There's some sort of murder mystery. There's some, like, it's not necessarily riffing on one particular movie. And so I was curious just everyone's reaction to it, since it is unique. Jamie, you're the top, so you can go first.
I thought this one was so fun. It's probably my favorite, but you know, I'm biased. We got my man's back. Coulson's back. So, and being very obsessive and like almost too much to the point where I'm like, dude, if this had been my introduction to Coulson, then he'd be in my camp of, okay, we know what Coulson's into, sniffing Thor. But in addition to that, I really loved how dark it was. Just watching all of our favorite characters get just assassinated. Hulk exploding was bleak. I thought was so cool. I also really loved, it was cool to see Ruffalo with Betty. It's a shame we couldn't get Liv in there, because that would have been a neat voice thing. But it was a fun episode. Ultimately, like, this show isn't necessarily for me, but I'm loving just how weird it's taking. And there are certain voices it was fun to see again. And I think they're doing a really good job of casting the voices of people that that they're replacing. Like Lake Bell was great. And as we all know, Jen and I and Aaron, we're all big fans of Lake Bell's Poison Ivy. So it's cool to see her make the jump over to Marvel. So I was a fan.
Aaron, what about you?
Well, as we were going along, I give them credit, because usually mystery stories have to misdirect you until the end. And I sat through half of it like, what the heck is going on? I expected Daniel Craig to walk out of nowhere with a suit and be like, here's what you need to figure out. And I was like, where's going on? I'm so confused. And it was really, like you said, Also, can I give credit to BD and Jim Viscardi? They keep freaking throwing up these smoke screens about the episodes. And I'm like, what could possibly happen in episode three? And I walk into it like unassuming and like, oh my God, they're murdering everyone. Everyone's dying left and right. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I wonder if this is building to some sort of overarching narrative thing now too. Like, it's like, there's been two episodes now where the last little bit of it's like, is this going to come into, you know, like what's going on later in the season? So I'm thoroughly enjoying the experience, and the art style seems to be almost like improving. It's growing on me more and more each week as well.
Mm-hmm. Jim, what about you? Since as Aaron mentioned, you did kind of keep a lot of this from us when you had.
Man, I am so finally happy to talk about this episode, because I think it's one of like I said, it was such a surprise. Like we didn't see any of this. Like it wasn't teased. Like when they started putting promos out for this yesterday, I was like, don't remind people that it's out. Don't show anything, because I think like going into it like that, and especially not seeing the, you know, I mean, I did not see the reveal of who the killer was coming. I did not. I was 1000% surprised, and it made so much sense. Like it made so much sense. I will say though, having watched it now second time, I would not be surprised if this is the episode that maybe starts an overarching story to the end of the season. I think what it does there's a lot of potential setups for it, and so I think it would be really interesting. But like, man, it was so great to like go back to the Incredible Hulk, like that moment in Incredible Hulk, and just see it, you know, Ruffalo-ized and all that. Like it was just a ton of fun. And man, we got to see Hank Pym in the Yellow Jacket costume, like that. It was super cool too.
I completely agree. Like this episode surprised me in so many ways that I was not expecting. Like just the way, like this showed how far we've gotten with the MCU, just showing like Captain Marvel and all of the Phase One heroes and characters and the Ant-Man universe and just everything all in one sitting was just very cool and kind of surreal to see. I think, like, I completely agree with Aaron and Jim. I feel like this is potentially leading to something, even if it's like something next season that we get some sort of follow-up on, because I feel like whatever new Avengers team they're kind of coming up with in this universe, it seems like there is a lot of potential to kind of move that forward. And like, I know I was talking about this with my boyfriend earlier, and like, even I would love a like Hope Van Dyne flashback episode that deals with her being in S.H.I.E.L.D., because I think like that whole storyline of it was really cool too. I do think we need to talk about Coulson, because he did really get to shine in this episode. And I know Jamie is dying over here getting to talk about Coulson again. He, like you said, his characterization was so like so interesting and almost weird, but in like the best possible way, of his obsession with Thor and his password for Steve to get into his computer. So Jamie, I want you to kind of share your thoughts on all of that.
Yeah, it was interesting because the Steve of it all was a little confusing, because I had initially assumed that this was still going to be like Captain Carter. But if Coulson's Steving his password, unless he's got a boyfriend named Steve we don't know about, Steve Rogers is going to be a part of the story. I thought that was interesting. It's weird, you know, for people who don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., this is kind of the Coulson that you know. He was we last saw him, not counting Captain Marvel, in Avengers, being very, you know, fanboying over Cap. And but if you're watching it, if you've watched all seven seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he's changed so much, and he would keep his chill now, and it's kind of fun to go back to that Phase One Coulson and amp him up even higher. I will say, I kind of wish that when Loki started like icing everything, I really thought Coulson was going to get impaled and die, and I think that would have been hilarious, just because like the ongoing joke of that Coulson just, yeah, the amount of times that he has died is hilarious. And I was kind of like, this is crazy, but I was like, oh, I kind of wanted him to die, because it doesn't matter, they're killing everybody else. I thought it would have been funny.
I'm like, you wanting Coulson to die really means something. Like, that's kind of crazy. Yeah, Jim, Aaron, what do y'all think about Coulson in this episode? Because I know he was definitely a highlight for me too.
Well, I really do enjoy him as a character, and I was really sad when he receded into the background of all like the Marvelness, because it was fun to have him pop up in all the early entries in Phase One. So anytime with Clark Gregg delivering these lines, I know you can tell he's having fun recording some of these things. Like, I was like, man, I wonder, you know, like, what if we could bring it, like, you know, bring him back? Maybe when they do their Captain Britain Corps show slash movie, whatever they're going to do, maybe he'll just be along as your audience surrogate to be like, what the heck is going on? That would be fun. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was cool. Also, he is Kenny.
Yeah. So dying is a superpower. I would love to see like a what if take, like, probably not this season, but maybe next season or whatever, that is along the lines of like kind of what they had Coulson do in the comics just recently during Heroes Reborn. I would love to see a Coulson gone bad. You know, since we're like, he's just kind of fed up and wants to take matters into his own hands and kind of does that. Like, I think that that would be really, really interesting. But man, there's just hearing Clark Gregg's voice as Coulson just feels like a nice warm blanket, right? Like, it is so weird. It is just so comforting. And I love it.
I love that.
And if you want to see Coulson gone bad, you know, you could just watch the sixth season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, but I want to see him put together the Squadron Supreme.
No, I get it. I get it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. So we talked about it a little bit, but this saw the return of Betty Ross for the first time since Incredible Hulk, which is kind of surreal. So what did everyone think about her coming back? Because it was really weird.
Was that Liv Tyler?
No, we were looking it up before the show. It was another voice actor. But like, she nailed the way that Liv Tyler's voice works. I think she did a pretty good job.
Liv is a specific voice, and I thought that she did a good job of that, like, wispy, ethereal kind of thing going on.
Yeah, so like, what did everyone think about that? Because I know personally, seeing her with Ruffalo Hulk, even in animation, was like, this is so weird. Like, this works, but it's so weird at the same time. So what did everyone else think about having her back in the fold?
I mean, that's it, right? Like, just knowing that, like, she is back in the fold. Like, someone said somewhere that, like, we're going to do this, and so we're going to reintroduce, you know, Liv Tyler to. So we're like, it just feels like, I don't know, like, between that and getting Abomination and Shang-Chi, just feels like we're about to come on an Incredible Hulk Renaissance kind of thing, where everyone just like totally appreciates everything that came and happened in that movie. And I like, that's it. Like, it was one of my early favorites in the MCU, I know. And so it's a little bit bewildering that we have gotten this far in the MCU and did not have Betty show up. And so hopefully it is a sign for things to come, because I mean, like, look, if she's not in She-Hulk or something, mm-hmm. then what have we done? What is Marvel doing? But it was just like, it's one of those things that, look, the Hulk movie is one that you assumed that Marvel just forgot and left on the in a garbage can somewhere, but they didn't, and they've embraced it, and I'm here for it.
Mm-hmm. Jamie, do you want to weigh in before you have to go do your interview?
Yeah, I kind of said it before. It's neat to. I mean, I've always said, you know, the one bummer is that we just didn't get Ruffalo in that movie, and I think that it's a movie I would watch all the time if we had Ruffalo in it. Because, like Jim said, it's a good movie. It's just a bummer that we don't have him in it. So just like seeing those characters interact with Ruffalo's voice was so neat, and she was also being kind of shady. I thought the whole sequence was really interesting. And I think someone said this in the comments. It was kind of cool to see her and Nat together, because it's like, a little love triangle in a way.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, what did you think about it?
I know for a fact, I made a joke about them freaking deep faking Ruffalo into Incredible Hulk in an earlier Phase Zero. So my eyebrows, when I was like, oh my God, no. Like, why is this my superpower? Can I get something else? But it is interesting, like, because Jim, I want you to know, like, in the Wakanda Files, that book they put out, that's like an MCU like guidebook thing, there's a ton of freaking Incredible Hulk stuff in there. And I was like, wait, what? You guys have acted like this hasn't existed for like a decade. And there's like a solid chapter and a half with just Hulk stuff in it. And I was like, could they be priming the pump, like you said, for something coming in the future? Maybe she's in She-Hulk. We know Ruffalo is something weird's coming. Something strange is coming. I think we should be expecting
Mark Ruffalo. We need that MCU reunion for sure.
We really do. Yeah.
We'll get it. I think we'll get it.
Yeah. So Jamie, do you want to plug anything before you have to head out? I know you said you have to head out.
Yes, I'm heading out. Always a pleasure. Check out, I don't know, my other podcast, Hollywood Already Did It. We're comparing these episodes to old Marvel properties that aren't MCU. And like we just did Howard the Duck and fun stuff like that. So a completely different perspective of the show. So that's all on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter, Jamie Cinematics. As always, a pleasure to be with you all. Shout out to Clark Gregg for coming back to us once again. We love you. See you guys later.
We love you. All right. So the other thing in this episode that I do need to talk about that's Hulk related was his death is like, it reminded me of that TikTok challenge that's going around of like inflating the LeBron James Space Jam toys until they explode. It gave me that energy. So I've seen so many tweets and just like reactions to it. I feel like people have also compared it to the Ant-Man and Thanos theory before Endgame of the way to kill Thanos. So it almost feels like this is a way that proves that this could work. So what did y'all think of that death? Because I know it is something.
This was an R-rated death that they were able to get away with doing in animation is really what it is, right? Like there's no way they would ever show something like that in live action. They can't. It would be it would be gruesome. And so I love that.
I thought about that Thanos thing so hard, and I want to know what the writer's room conversation was, because someone had to bring it up. Like, you know, if we do this, that's the first thing these people are going to think of, right? Because you have to think about the internet before you put things out into the ether, because it'll just, you know, get misconstrued. I know it's going to be a reaction image for something, like a reaction video for something at some point in the near future. And also, it lets you know that there will go there during this show. I am now terrified of that Marvel Zombies episode, because I know that they will go certain places that we would not go in live action.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah.
No. Well, so that's going to be something.
Well, so going off of that, like Hank Pym's reintroduction as Yellowjacket was terrifying. Like him being the killer was definitely surprising. And the way that they like nailed the unhinged Hank Pym in the comics of like when he melds with Ultron and just completely goes crazy. I feel like they really condensed that down here while also making him Yellowjacket. And the episode also revealed that his whole reason for doing all of these murders was because Hope became a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent and she died 2 years before. And so he is kind of getting revenge on S.H.I.E.L.D. as a concept for killing his daughter. So what did y'all think about of that reveal? Because I know, like Aaron said, like there was no way to really guess who the killer was for parts of the episode.
Honestly, I feel like this stemmed immediately from the scene. And I can't remember which movie it was, but where it's young Hank Pym yelling at S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. Was that the first Ant-Man, or is that Ant-Man?
I think it's the first one. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, so I feel like it basically picks up from there, right? Where like Hank Pym is like super mad at S.H.I.E.L.D. and then like, and then just quits and then goes off and becomes, you know, like, you know, and then like maybe is like his, you know, the Hope stuff just kind of happens or whatever. But I feel like that dissentment is where that began, and it just kind of took off from there. But I think, look, if there was ever a character that's going to go off like that, it's Hank Pym. Because like he has been, you know, he was, you know, in the MCU treated, you know, poorly, I guess, or just, you know, he had his issues. And so I think that's where, you know, at least in my head canon, that's where it stems from.
It's like an interesting thing where you mix a lot of the different readings of the situation together, right? Because I think as this awful 78 in the comments says, like, do you think he went crazy off of the particles like Yellowjacket did? Which is a good point. But also the S.H.I.E.L.D. thing with Hope dying, I think it's a reference to when Black Widow said that she ran into Winter Soldier in the same place. So like Bucky running around is obviously on them too, right? Because they lost him back in the past. Mm-hmm. So there's like a bunch of reasons why he just broke and decided to go on this weird micro-sized homicidal rampage that none of us saw coming. It's just very, I mean, they're like, once again, that's another side of the coin of this whole Hulk exploding thing, where they were not going to have him go crazy in the movies and live action because of what happened. At least I don't know if they will or not. I don't think so. It doesn't look like it, but they are totally free to do that here. Mm-hmm. They're completely free. And you're going to see some other stuff that you're like, oh, that was interesting from comics, probably pop up before the season's over too.
Well, and I will say, I love the fact that like Hank is at the center of this, because in the comics, Ant-Man and Wasp were part of the original Avengers. And so not mm-hmm. having that in the MCU was kind of a little bit of a bummer. And so I like the way that this is kind of turned on its head of, oh, he is responsible for making the Avengers never happen, like for killing all of them off. I thought that that was really cool. And then we also get Loki content in this episode. He came down because he wanted revenge for Thor's death, and he ended up helping Fury in fighting Hank Pym. And then he took over Earth. He just was like, I'm just going to rule Earth now. And get everything I wanted out of the first Avengers movie. I know I've seen some speculation online. Do we think this could be like President Loki or King Loki or any of the other iterations? Like, could that be the origin story of it? Like, what do y'all think?
Look, there was a Loki that they showed us in the trailers that we did not see in the show. And I wonder if that is being saved for season two. Like, I wonder if they've almost maybe cut some content from filming the first season and have saved it for season two, and that this King Loki in What If will be that King Loki variant in Loki season two.
That could be cool. Yes.
Yeah.
Oof, Aaron, do you have any theories?
I think that, you know, we've gotten so far away from sometimes where you remember in phase one and phase two, like the villains would just be there for that thing and we're going to defeat them and you might never think about them again. Right. But it seems like we're really leaning into like, oh no, like he really could pop up in season two. This is how crazy it's gotten. Jim's big galaxy brain theory is totally on the board. It's totally fine. Like, yes, totally. It's completely feasible, completely feasible. And I mean, literally, we've seen him escape into the time stream with the Tesseract before. I have money on that being how he gets away here as well, if he does, in fact, get away and get into live action universes, because they just like those cubes, man. It's like cats with those toys. They just like it. It's like, oh, I want. So, yeah, I think that we could see him again. And I think that that's going to be possibly like, if there is a big bad of this What If season, it'll probably end up being him. And unfortunately, he'll probably end up getting used by someone more powerful than him, because that's what Loki's do too.
Yeah. And then finally, the episode ends with Fury going back and getting Steve out of ice, since we had all been kind of wondering what was happening to him this episode. And then and it seems like they're kind of forming their own Avengers team. So as I kind of said at the start of the discussion, I feel like this is building to something. I don't know what. I don't know if we're going to see these characters cross over with like Captain Carter and Star-Lord T'Challa and everything else, but it feels like there's some sort of nugget here that they're going to continue with. So what do y'all think about that?
I popped so hard when he pulled out the pager. Because I was like, what? Because, you know, we're firmly in like, oh, phase one land. And then it's like, oh, yeah, I've had this the entire time. Like, this is the contingency plan right here. Like, Hank Pym ain't going to do nothing against Carol. That's not going to work. So I think we're building the team. And then I guess you have Captain Carter, Captain America from that universe, T'Challa. And I would imagine that we might get some version of Doctor Strange from these from the images we've seen. And then carnival cape Spider-Man at some point, not Tom Holland. Stevia Tom Holland will probably be a part of the team too.
Jim, what did you think of the ending?
I think like you said, I think this may be it. Like, this may be them building to something else, right? Like, I know at first we were like, I don't see it. But I think this episode is potentially the big game changer episode where it may now start connecting. And maybe that is why we didn't get episode four to watch ahead of time. And so if that's the case, then let's go.
I love it. Yeah, I completely agree. So I think that's it for our What If discussion. This has been so much fun. Just before we wrap things up, Jim, I guess, Jim, you're at the top of the screen. Do you have anything you want to add?
No, the only other thing I want to add, just it's a total, like, it's a Marvel thing, but totally not necessarily on our radar. There's a new mobile game out called like Future Revolution, and it's pretty good. I played a little bit this morning before I started. And if you like playing games like Future Fight or whatever, this is that on steroids. So, you know, if you're a mobile game person. It's kind of like an MMO in a sense. So check it out. I'm having fun with it. Let me know. And, you know, tweet me your player name or IDs or whatever, man. And I'll add you if I get a chance.
I had seen a couple tweets about that, but I wasn't sure how it was. So I will definitely have to check that out.
Yeah, for sure. I also want to say, Jenna, you've done a great job today.
Thank you so much. I feel like I've just been internally screaming for the last hour. So I'm glad that this isn't going well. Aaron, do you have anything final to add?
I did not help with the internal screaming. I apologize so much for those of you at home. I'm here on a Wi-Fi hotspot because our Wi-Fi went out the second I got on. It's delightful. It's never a dull moment. But Jenny did such a good job. Thank you for leading us through as Brandon runs through a terminal in Las Vegas looking like the freaking weekend. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, this was fun. This was absolute. Like I had like a panic attack as I was falling asleep last night of like, how am I going to do this? But I'm glad that it seems to have turned out well. You can find Jim on Twitter at Jim Viscardi. You can find Aaron on Twitter at Summit Lake Hornet. You can find me on Twitter at Hey, it's Jenna Lynn. If you haven't already, please follow our show on Twitter. Follow Comic Book on all of the relevant social media platforms. Please subscribe to Phase Zero if you're not already doing so, either on Twitch or on your podcast form, preferably both, because we would definitely appreciate both. But yeah, thank you everybody so much for joining in with us. Also, Lizard226, I feel like we have to get them in there somewhere. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you later.